Tak můžem. Ahoj všichni, chtěl bych vás tady přivítat u květnového setkání Czech Java User Group. Dnes budeme mít dvě přednášky. První přednáška bude o vývojovém prostředí JBuilder 2007 a druhá přednáška bude o objektové databázi Cache. Takže já to nebudu prodlužovat. Začneme prezentací Johna Harrisona o JBuilder 2007.
Okay. Welcome everyone, and thank you for coming along this evening. I guess a short introduction first of all. My name is John Harrison, and I work for the CodeGear division at Borland, where I basically look after our Java tools and technologies throughout the European region. Based in the United Kingdom, as you may be able to tell, so I also do a lot of work with our larger Java customers in that sort of locale as well. In terms of the agenda this evening, what we wanted to spend a little bit of time with you, first of all, was just to talk a little bit about what we're doing with open source in particular, how we think it makes sense for organizations like CodeGear to work with and build on open source, particularly from a development standpoint, of course, and also really talk a little bit about what feedback we're getting from our customers around the challenges that they have at the moment as well, and how we can help them with that. Then really want to spend most of the time talking around three specific areas that we're getting feedback on that we need to focus on, and what we've done in the current product versions. And that's really around making it easier for people to work as a team, making modeling and graphical designers work in a very code-oriented way, so it's very friendly for the developer and the programmer, and also looking at some areas of how we can understand and improve application performance as well. And we'll do most of those pieces really by demonstrating within our product set rather than talking about in slideshows. Then the new piece really that we also wanted to share with you as well as we're here, quite recently we've also announced that we will be supporting the Ruby language and the Ruby on Rails framework. So we're still in very early field test, but maybe at the end of the session, I think Roman was saying that he thinks there's quite a lot of interest in Ruby, so maybe we'll just do 5 or 10 minutes giving you a quick preview of that technology also. And then, obviously, we can have some time at the end for questions as we go through. Okay. So, I guess from a commercial vendor perspective, there's a few things that we look at when we look at the open source community. And I'll also try and give you some insight into what our customers and other developers tell us about working with open source as well. But I think from our perspective, you know, what we've seen is a much more greater willingness for organizations to work with open source technology. However, they still have concerns about how they can do that in an effective way. So it's really about enabling them to use open source, but get value from open source and use it in the right way for them. So that's sort of one of the first things we wanted to do on that basis, was really look at how we could host our technology on open source solutions. In our case, we basically took the decision to use Eclipse as our base framework and our technology platform going forward. In making that decision, one thing that was very important to us was to make sure that we really embrace Eclipse as a platform and not do things in our own way. So what we have made a conscious decision to do is to use the Eclipse tools, use the Eclipse platform, use the Eclipse projects as they come through, and not invent our own way of doing things, as we don't want to end up with two different directions in the Eclipse world. The other thing we really wanted to focus on as well was bringing some of the key developer-oriented technologies that we've had for some time now in our existing products and making sure that we can implement them and deliver them effectively on the open source platform also. And, you know, again and again, one of the issues that we hear from our customers, particularly, you know, in kind of this world of distributed teams and companies located in very geographically dispersed locations, really a renewed focus on team productivity and how we can make that easier. I'm not going to go into the details really of what Eclipse is, because I'm quite sure that pretty much everyone in the room has some idea around that. But I think I really include this slide just to emphasize, you know, Eclipse is made up of a large number of projects. It is supported by a large number of commercial organizations as well as open source developers. And again, really, you know, what we look at doing is utilizing those Eclipse-based projects, but then looking at how we can take them a stage forward and build on them. I guess in terms of some of the overall kind of trends or problem areas that we hear from Java developers and Java development teams, these are probably some of the more common. So the first one I've touched on already, which is really just around open source. People see, you know, open source is out there. They accept that they can get value from it, but it's still a little bit difficult for them to understand how they can do it in a manageable way. So that's really one of the areas that we try and address with our tool set. At the same time, many organizations are looking at how they can blend the use of open source alongside commercial solutions they may be using, maybe particular application servers or other deployment platforms, and how they can bring those together. The whole area around distributed teams, you know, about how we can understand the status of our projects, which team members are working on what parts of the project, and, you know, what is the current up-to-date status at any point in time. Compliance is also an issue that comes up a lot more, and that could be compliance to specific industry regulations, or it could just be compliance at a simple level of ensuring best practices when coding or adhering to in-house standards for Java development and so on. And also something that still we hear quite a lot about is really how to effectively use models, how to effectively use UML, particularly kind of the aspects around model-driven development. You know, it's not always easy and not always possible to bring that together with the traditional development way of working in the source code, if you like. So again, that's another area that we've tried to really focus on and address in the latest versions of our solutions. So really what we're talking about within the development world here and what we're trying to address is really a need for bringing together the world of open source alongside commercial solutions, obviously working with the existing Java platform and the Java standards, and doing that in a way that's easy for development teams to work with. So that's really what we've been trying to do with our focus on the latest version of JBuilder. So drilling down into a few of those areas in a little bit more detail, the first area is really around team working. And one of the things that we really wanted to look at being able to do was to really equip development teams with a set of tools that's easy for them to have a whole development infrastructure, a whole development platform that for them to work on in as easy a way as possible. And that could include open source solutions. It can also include commercial solutions. So this is really, I guess, something that would be of particular value if a development team is beginning from scratch, or, you know, one, two, or three, or larger development teams beginning from scratch on a project, and they want to put in place an infrastructure which is going to support them, covering things like source code management, bug tracking, requirements, project planning, and continuous integration build systems, and so on. So what we allow and support within JBuilder now is really the very easy configuration, installation, and also integration into existing development platforms that may be out there around some of the more popular open source and commercial solutions. So what you'll see in a second is that we can very easily set up and work with solutions based around Subversion, Bugzilla, Xplanner, and some others as well. And it's really about making it very easy to get these things set up, configured, and integrated into the development environments. So it's not always an easy task to show team working on a single laptop, but I think there's a few things that we can show you that hopefully will be of interest here. So let me just bring up our IDE. So this is the latest version of JBuilder that we have, and you know, as I'm sure most of you will see, it is very much built on the Eclipse platform. It is an Eclipse-based solution. And the thing I just wanted to spend a few minutes on here, first of all, was around that team working aspect. So I'm just going to go straight in and bring up the Project Assist wizard and let that run through. And I think this will explain it a lot more clearly around what we're trying to achieve than we can really do easily in slides. So that's just why I wanted to give a quick show of this. So let me just give it a name, and I guess we can change that to my name here. Here I can add in particular projects that I might already have in existence. And then at this stage, I can basically choose the particular solutions that I want to work with in terms of my development environment. So I'm going to stick with the defaults here. So we're going to work with Subversion. We're going to use Continuum as our build system, Bugzilla for defect tracking, and Xplanner as our overall task provider. Now, because we can integrate into existing installations of these tools, if they're already in use, we do have several options in terms of scanning to identify those and integrating with them. In this case, I'm just going to skip that and go through to a clean installation. And what we'll see next when that comes through is that we then have the ability to configure and really set up and install how we want to work with these solutions. Okay, it's having a long think about it this afternoon. The next thing from there, really, while it's going through there, is another primary concern for us was really around how we can then easily get this information out to the individual developers. So what I'm doing here really is obviously more of an administration task, and it would be done once at the project setup. And then what we need to do is look at how we can push that information out to the rest of the development team. Okay. So there's the two steps, really. There's the step of actually doing the configuration and then the step of making it available to the developers. So I'll just expand that up here and we'll have a quick look through the administration side. So this is really here where I'd specify where I want these solutions to be installed. Once I've done that, and there's different options for each of these particular sort of back-end systems here. The other thing I can also do is generate a central list of users that I want to be populated into all of those back-end systems, so we don't have to set up things separately in Bugzilla and in Xplanner and the other systems. We can do it all from a single location here. And I can also specify things like what type of access they should have to each of the individual systems. Having done that, I could then go on and add in additional projects that I might be wanting to work with. And the final thing here, really, the source. What we're actually doing here while we're working through that graphical interface is really building up a description of the configuration and what we want to work with. And the idea is once we have that set up in the state that we want, we've gone ahead and done the installation, we can then actually push that information out to all the individual developers and pull that in directly into the development environment, and they'll then be configured to work with XPlanner, to work with Subversion, and have all of the default settings for the project. I don't understand why, but it's having a real struggle painting that screen this afternoon, so we'll let it carry on with that for a second. Okay. Got there eventually. So over here as well, what we'll also see is we actually have options to capture those configurations and actually automatically send out emails to the development team, to the users that we've populated, and that will deliver them the configuration information necessary to start using those repositories sort of straight off with minimal effort on their part. So that's really one of the main focuses around this particular release and what we've been working on. And again, although the idea of distributed teams has been around a long time, it still is something that that we get feedback from, that it's still can be more difficult than it should be. The other area linked in to the team working, you know, once we've got it administered, set up, and our developers are working with it, the other area is then how we can actually surface that information to make it useful and transparent across the project team. So here we have the idea of a project portal, which is purely browser-based, so anyone can look at this information. They don't need to be using the development tools to see this. And this is, again, configurable, built on the Liferay portal. And we can surface different things, such as the current bug statistics for the project. We can do snapshots and ongoing analysis of the metrics associated with the source code, so assessing the quality over time of the source code for the entire project and publishing that. Burn down type charts, you know, work completed against features, and so on. So the idea really is that as well as configuring and allowing people to use that environment, it also enables anyone to get a very up-to-date, real-time view into what the status of the project is at any point in time. Okay, so that was a little bit on the team working that we have there. One of the other aspects that's quite a major feature within JBuilder this time around is the modeling capabilities and the modeling aspects, which are built around something that we call live source technology. So I guess first of all, it is a UML solution, UML 1.4 and UML 2, and it also covers other areas such as documentation, audits and metrics, and generation automatically of some of those particular diagram types. We'll look at a few of those as we go through. We also use that same design surface, so that same modeling notation, as a graphical work area for dealing with enterprise Java Bean applications, and also web services as well, for that matter. So it's a common design surface using the standard UML notation, but working in a very interactive way directly linked to the source code. So a developer's absolutely free to work either with the graphical environment or to work with the source code, whichever they're more comfortable with, and whichever makes most sense for the tasks that they're doing at any particular time. The other things we can also do here is effectively switch between different application servers and convert the vast majority of project code from one app server to another, and also bring EGB2 applications up to the EGB3 level as well. I mentioned web services. I think we'll take a look at some of those points in the product rather than look at them in PowerPoint here. So I think a couple of things we can take a quick look at, just try and illustrate the live source technology and what this actually delivers and how this can help the developer. Let's take a look at working with a JEE application. And also just the whole overall kind of what we call code archaeology, sort of audits and metrics and understanding the source code. So let's just drop out here. And just to work with this a little bit, what I'm just going to do is go ahead and actually import a particular project. And this is actually going to be an old EGB2-based project from an older version of JBuilder. So let's just go off and bring this project in. And in here, in this particular import mechanism, it's actually going to be looking at that particular project file, identifying things like libraries that are needed, and making sure that can resolve those and bring them through for us as well. I can then select the target runtime. At the moment, I've just got JBoss configured within my environment, but there's also support for the other main application servers as well. And we can just go ahead and bring this guy in. What we'll also see here is, as we're working with it, at this point we can choose things like the Java version that we want to continue working with, and also the EGB version as well that we want to bring this project in with. Likewise for the web portions of the application, particular versions of the different APIs that we're going to be working with. It's going to take a few seconds to bring that through. And once it's gone through there, what we should have is a basic EGB application that we can just use to explore around some of the modeling and design capabilities that are provided. In the background there, you can probably just see that there's quite a detailed import log gets generated as well as part of this process. So any areas that we're not able to bring in automatically, then they will be highlighted and brought to the developer's attention. Okay, and we're just about there. Just expand this out. Okay, so now we've got a graphical representation of our EGB-based application. We can work with it in the graphical designer. We can also work with it in the source code, depending on what our needs are. And we can also add various descriptions and annotations and other things around this as well. So if we do pick any one of these, for example, and highlight it, you can see there that we've got the split view of the working with the source code or working with the enterprise Java being directly in the graphical environment. And if I want to go off and create new, sorry, the screen's a little bit squashed here, but I think that's a new session bean, is it we've got here? Yeah, we can obviously go off, create new session beans, add in new business methods or whatever else we might want to add in there. From the graphical designer, or as I mentioned, you know, in here what we should see, I'm equally free to go through and start working with them in the code element as well. And everything that we do here on the diagrams, in terms of class diagrams and the attributes we're seeing here, that is all driven directly from the source code, so these things don't get out of sync. We're free to switch between the two and work in whatever environment we want to do so. Other things we can do while we're in here, related to the live source technology, is really looking at the overall, or giving us some benchmarks to look at the quality of the code and the maintainability of the code and how complicated it is. So also from within this project, if I go off and look at the menus here, we can see we have an audit capability and a metric capability. And if we look at audits first, audits really deal with things like adherence to kind of Java standards, coding style. So there's a whole set of things here that we can configure for our own requirements and work with as to what it is that we want to analyze. And I guess this is the kind of thing that can be helpful in code reviews and peer-to-peer reviews as a good starting point and a starting measure. Likewise for metrics, within here, this is really trying to give us some way of measuring the actual complexity of the code we have. So there's some industry standard metrics, ways of doing this, things we can look at on the inheritance levels, the encapsulation, how complicated that is, also sort of basic things in terms of import statements, comment ratios, and so on. So there's a whole set of things there that we can configure and work with, and then go ahead and analyze. In this case, we probably do the metrics. It might be a little bit more interesting than the straight audits. So I'm going to go ahead and run that against that particular project that we have. And that's now gone through. And we can look at this in a number of different ways. But you'll see that, for example, for each of our enterprise Java beans and entities here, we've got a whole set of different numbers being displayed. Not the easiest way to understand these things. So the other thing we can also do is provide a graphical analysis and look at these in a more high-level way. And here, the red line is basically what we have configured our threshold to be. So we're basically saying that when we're looking at the source code that's been written, when we're looking at how complicated it is and how difficult it may be to maintain, we've set this threshold as to when we're going to get a little bit concerned about things. And if we look at some of these particular areas here, so we've got different measures that have been put in place there. Some of these are sort of like number of overridden methods, for example, is higher than we'd like it to be in this particular application. Whereas other things like the number of attributes being used as well within our guidelines, size of operations, and so on. So within the IDE as a developer, I can get this information very easily for my own pieces of the project that I'm working on. And then when we link this back with some of the team features that we spoke about a little bit earlier, we can actually do this type of analysis for the whole project and also do it over periods of time as well, so that we can see as the project progresses, basically, you know, what impact is this having on the complexity of the source code as we're measuring it, and also potentially the quality associated with that. So these can be quite powerful mechanisms to help us understand and work with the source code that we have. The other thing I should have mentioned really when talking about the design surfaces and showing the higher level view of the application, if we drop that down maybe a little bit, we can see here we've got a diagram that can help us understand the relationships and links between different aspects of the project that we're working on. And we can actually generate this type of diagram from any piece of Java code, basically. So, you know, if you've got existing projects, existing Java applications, we can point the live source technology to those, and it'll generate the class diagrams for you. You can then go on to generate things like documentation for them and run the audits and metrics against it. So there's nothing required to the projects or the source code to make this happen. And one of the demonstrations that we sometimes do is basically to point the technology at something like the Apache Tomcat engine or one of the other open source projects. And you can see that purely by having the source code, we can get this diagrammatic representation generated for us, and we can work with it in that way and then take it forward in that way. So that can be quite a powerful way of understanding perhaps older applications and projects and also helping to document them and take them forward. It can also be very useful if you are working with other external organisations delivering different parts of the project. Then in essence, this gives us a way of measuring the deliverables that are coming through to us. Okay. So that was a brief look at some of the graphical designers and the modelling elements that we have there. I'm just going to push on now. I just want to get through a few other bits and pieces. And I appreciate where, you know, it's going to be quite a touch on the surface of some of these features, but it was really to try and give you an update as to how we have built on top of what open source is providing. So the other area that we had a focus on really was around understanding application performance. And again, this is something that's now integrated into the development environment, doesn't require any code modifications to use, and can basically connect either to local or remote Java processes. And the areas really that we're focused on here are profiling technologies, so understanding memory and CPU usage, thread debugging capabilities, so actually being able to monitor and identify thread deadlock situations, for example, code coverage to actually measure the elements of the application and project that have been executed or tested or not, and then also something called a request analyzer, which really works at a slightly higher level, looking at things like the JEE APIs and telling us how much time our application is spending making JDBC data access or performing JNDI lookups or instantiating beans or other things that are being performed. So that gives us a slightly higher level view. So again, let's just do a very quick look at the types of information we can get out of the profiling. And again, let's just very quickly create a new project. And this one's just a basic client and server type application, but it's quite good because it should mean that we can do a couple of different pieces of profiling and information gathering against the two different parts of the application. Okay, let's just let that run through. So let's close those lights down. So this is a fairly simple application, which is actually a game of chess, as you can probably see from the descriptions here. And I've got some server components. So I've got my actual chess server, which I'm going to start up first of all. But I'm actually going to start this up under the control of our profiler. So it's a Java application. Java profiling, we optimize it. And for this particular part of the application, I'm actually going to look at the code coverage and understand what's actually being executed and run. So let's just go ahead and start that. I'm not going to switch to that perspective just yet because we're going to do a little bit more with this application. But our server started and it's sitting there waiting for us now. So let's go right ahead and start up our viewing program. And this time, start the profiler. But let's actually do some profiling on this one to understand memory usage and understand what else is going on in there. So let me just log in there. And there's our nice chess application. But in the background here, what we can now see is within the development environment, we're now seeing a very graphical representation of the memory usage of our application and all the different instances, the objects that have been created, the size in terms of what they're actually taking up. And we can also apply filters to this as well to look at just our own particular Java classes or the piece of our project that we're particularly interested in. What we should also see is I can, for example, put markers down to say, well, let's see what happens at this point in the application when I go ahead and start moving some of the pieces around. And we should see here sort of real time, we're actually seeing what effect that has, and we'll see some differences, maybe negative. That's typically because the garbage collector has came in and collected those up for us. But we'll also see what instances are being created for us. And I happen to know that in this particular application, I think we're using a hash map to store a record of the chess piece moves. So we'll see that one growing as we work with the application. We can also drill down into these different areas. So if I select one of these guys, which is the piece location, what we're then going to see is information on all those different instances, basically, that we have being created for us. And we should actually also be able to drill down and actually see and resolve that down to the pieces of source code in our application that are actually recreating those instances of that particular object. So we can, in a very dynamic way, really understand what's happening with the running application and in a very interactive way work with it and follow that through. While that's been going on at the back end of my application, at the server end, we've actually been running our class coverage part of the application. What we should see in here coming through is that that's been going off and basically telling us how much of the application code has actually been executed. And again, we can easily drill down in here. So if we pick something like, like the chess server itself, we can see that approximately 45% of the code has been executed. We can then see the coverage for the individual classes within that piece of the code as well. And again, you know, the main class, for example, we could actually drill into the source code on here. And on the far right-hand side, you can probably just see those numbers there. That's actually telling us how many times each particular line of code has been executed. So this can be very powerful in terms of understanding areas to focus on to improve performance of the application, but also used in conjunction with testing scenarios as well to make sure that you are, you know, hitting a threshold for testing of the application. Maybe we want to cover 95% of the code in our test suites and so on. So that can really help us identify and follow that through. The information can all be exported out as well, so we can capture it out in various formats into, I think, PDF or HTML formats, so you can also generate reports from these as well. Other things we've got in there, it's not really a good application to use with the CPU profiler here, but if we start recording and I start doing a few things, it's not really stressing out my machine, but what we should see is in the background here on that snapshot, yeah, we're probably not going to see anything particularly active there. We probably missed that. Yeah, we may do that with a bigger application, but here it would actually show us all of the main threads coming through there, at what points they're active, at what points they're idle, so we can again easily identify the most used threads. And again, that's then a good target for us to focus our efforts on improving performance in that part of the application. Okay, and there's a whole set of additional capabilities that are available in here as well. And you know, again, just to emphasize, we don't need to do anything special to our source code to enable this to happen. Okay, I'm just gonna jump back here. So the other thing, as I said, I just wanted to spend maybe 5 minutes or so on, is also just talking a little bit about some of the other technologies we're working with and other things that we have coming through here. So I guess this is a new product that we've recently announced. It's still in quite an early field test, so you know, it's not feature complete at this stage. But in terms of our high-level goals and what we're looking to achieve, is really, you know, to give a productive way of working with the Ruby language and the whole Ruby on Rails framework. You know, increase the productivity of experienced Ruby developers, and I'll talk a bit about how we're doing that in the product, but also have a whole set of features which make it easy to get to grips with the Ruby language and work with it as if it's something that you're particularly new to. And really trying to bring together the kind of command line features along with the IDE features to give a very productive way of working. So in this particular stage of the field test, what a lot of our focus has gone on to is really all around the kind of the code insights and code prompting type technologies and getting that right for the Ruby environment. Longer term, as we get closer to release and through the field test, we'll also see some more specific visual designers and visual ways of working with Ruby applications. And we also have a concept of something that we call commanders, which is really bringing the command line into the IDE itself. So again, what we can do is just give you a little flavor as to how this is actually going to look. And bring this up. So this is our IDE for working with Ruby on Rails. Again, it is built on the Eclipse platform, as you can probably see. And as I say, at this stage, it is fairly early on, so there's a really limited set of things that we can show you. But I think some of the code insights and code prompting features are certainly getting there and are quite nice. So we'll have a bit of a focus on that. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new Rails project. And I'm going to give it a name. It's going to call that sample. and I can specify a database that I want to work with here. And that's going to go off and basically generate for us a Ruby on Rails project. And it's, you know, it's a standard Ruby on Rails project using the standard framework, so it's nothing specific to us in this regard. And one of the things that we wanted to do here is really try and bring together the kind of the graphical way of working with the kind of command line way that's often associated with working with the sort of the scripting based side of Ruby. So as I was filling in that graphical wizard to create my new project, what you're probably seeing going on in the background there is inside, this is one of these commanders that I talked about. So inside our project commander, we can see exactly the scripts that are driving that and are being executed to work with our application. So what we should now have inside here is a set of very basic application framework generated for us. We've got a controller generated there, and you know we're going to go through in a second and generate a view and a model associated with that as well. So working with the source code, there's sort of lots of little things that we're working with to make it easier to work with the language. So you'll see sort of lots of integrations directly into the standard sort of help and doc systems in there that we can sort of bring up very easily, and also sort of lots of shortcuts to work around the different parts of the application and jump through those guys and work with them. Also the standard kind of outline views that you'd expect to see in there are coming through as well. And as I said, really trying to link that through with the idea of working with it effectively in a sort of an integrated command line as well in the application. Okay. Inside the project commanders, so as well as in the source code, obviously up here, as we'll see in a moment, I've got code prompting and code insight coming through, but also really at the command line level. So inside my console here, I've also got code insight technologies coming through to prompt me in working with those. I apologize, but I've got a very set script that I need to make sure I do things in the right order for the field test, otherwise it might not quite go as planned. So bear with me while we just go through that. So the next thing we're going to do is basically go off and generate a model associated with this. So again, we've got the code insight coming through. It's a little bit slow in this particular build, but it gets there in the end. So we can see the different things we can go ahead and generate, and said we're going to generate a model. And for this very basic example, what we're going to do is just back onto a MySQL database and use it as a way of storing blog posts for a very simple web application. So I'm just going to call this blog and let that go off and run through. Okay, so now what we should see is under our DB folder, we've now got a piece of code which we're going to be able to execute to go off and create a table for me in my MySQL database, and also go off and create some columns for me as well. So again, using Code Insight to prompt me in here. I'm just going to give this a name of post date should do. Create another column. We'll call this title. And that's just going to be of type string. And again, we can do create a final column of body, and that's just going to be of type text. Okay, let's save that away. The other thing I just want to check is the configuration file for my database. So in this particular field test, it always defaults to sample development. I think for this one, I've already created an empty schema called sample_prog. Okay, let me just check I did connect to that. Yeah, sample_prog, okay. So having done that, what we should now be able to do is drop back down to our command prompt and actually go ahead and run the user code insight, actually, to run a make command on this, and go through and do the db migrate. There it is. Okay, and let that execute. So that's just going to go through and take that code we've written and actually create the columns in our database for us, which it's now done. So I guess we can just verify that very quickly by making sure that worked properly. And we've now got a blogs table created there for us. Okay, so the next thing we should be able to do from there is now actually go ahead and generate a controller associated with that. So script generate, this time controller, and my controller is just going to be called, I'm going to call it blog. And there's my controller, and very simply in this case I'm just going to add in some code to do scaffold blog and use the framework to do the work for me. And I think I should now be able to run it actually. So let's go ahead and start the server up. So that's going to bring up the WebBrick server for me in this case, which is now started, and it's listening on port 3000 there. So I'm now just going to go across to one of the HTML files here and say that I want to run that inside Mozilla. We'll just go ahead and say OK to all of that. At this point, we will get an error, basically, because it hasn't correctly fed through my URL. So we can just check that the server's up and running by going to the main index page, which it is. And what we should now actually be able to go ahead and do is go to our blogs application. Sorry, our blog application, wasn't it? Not blogs. And there we can see we're now basically got a very basic front end generated for us. But it is going back to the SQL database that we generated and storing the information in there. We can see the posts being stored, we can edit them, create new ones, and so on. So I think really the focus is really around getting that that code insight and code prompting type capability very much in a useful way, both in terms of the code itself, but also in that command line interface as well, so that really people can choose how they're going to be working with things, working with graphical wizards to drive it, as well as working with the command line that we're providing in there also. So that was a very quick preview of some of the things we've got going on with the Ruby and Ruby on Rails framework as well. So I think really, last few minutes, just a couple of things I want to mention, really. First thing is the Ruby product is in field test. Still early stages. We're looking for a release the second half of this year. If anyone is interested in working on that, if that's an area that you're keen to get involved with, then please feel free to drop me an email and we can get you signed up onto the field test and get some feedback from you and keep you obviously involved as we take it forward. Just as a quick summary, then, I guess, on the things we talked about. So really what we've been focusing on over the last really sort of year and driving forward is how, with the uptake and the increased acceptance and usage of open source, how as a development tools provider we can still add value on top of that. So we're really committed to making sure that we are able to continue to innovate and drive functionality and features forward. With our JBuilder line and going forward with also new products on the Ruby on Rails framework as well. I guess in a few sort of specifics really just on JBuilder, in terms of the things that I've talked about this afternoon, and just to be clear, I guess really what's in which product for people, all of the UML modeling, sorry, all of the EJB modeling, most of the UML modeling, things like class diagrams, sequence diagrams, the sort of the RAD wizards, they're basically in our base JBuilder product. Okay, the JBuilder Enterprise product is really more focused on the team environment, so configuration and administration of a team environment, a team development platform, and working forward with that. And I guess the final thing just really on here was we are offering special discounted our pricing for JBuilder at the event. So hopefully you've all seen the sort of leaflets we have there. So do feel free to take a look. And, you know, if anything you've seen has been of interest, then do feel free to contact us on the details provided there. Loads more information up on our website, as you'd expect. There's also a whole set of recorded videos from the product team showing specific features in more detail in the product. And also we do now have things like a regular sort of feedback forum where the product team come online with our streaming servers and basically talk with the community, get feedback from them, and talk about what they've got coming through. That's new as well. Okay, well, I think I'm conscious of time. I know we started a little bit late, but I think we're probably at about where we're heading to. If there are any questions, I'd be very happy to try and answer them now. I'm hoping that at least some people followed my English part of the way. In that case, I'm going to ask some questions. Just on the Ruby side of things, maybe could we have a show of hands? How many people are either using Ruby or expect to be using Ruby sort of fairly soon? Anyone do anything with that? One or two, okay. I'm going to risk I know that there's a few other IDEs with quite a strong presence sort of in this area of the world. So I guess just out of interest in terms of people using NetBeans, who uses NetBeans at the moment? Quite a strong interest there. People using Base Eclipse, just the Eclipse product? Quite a lot of those as well, okay. IdeaGens, IntelliJ, a couple of those. And JBuilder, got a couple of cities in JBuilder as well, okay. Interesting. I think looking at the commercial sort of IDEs, what we still do see is, you know, we get strong interest from a lot of the larger teams. But I must admit, talking to, you know, a lot of developers, one of the reasons and drivers behind us moving JBuilder to be more open source based is obviously, you know, the show of hands we had on things like Eclipse and NetBeans there, you know, that increased uptake and increased acceptance. So as I say, what we're really trying to do is look at how we can, you know, let you continue to use the pieces that you like in those solutions, but maybe add a few bits in different areas that could make a difference to the way in which you develop and work. Okay, I think with that in mind, I'll finish there. So
okay.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.